This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
This is Rebecca Buchanan, host of New Books Network, New Books in Popular Culture. And today I am here with Dalal Abu El Soud, who is the author of Fish, Milk, Tamarind, a book of Egyptian Arabic food expressions. Dalal, thanks for being here with me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Could you start out by telling us a little bit about why you decided to write this book and put this book together?
Yes, of course. I teach Arabic at the American University in Cairo. And one day, while I was going home, I heard this a very strange conversation. To me, it was strange, between two Egyptian students. They, of course, they study in English and everything at the university. But one was saying in Arabic, of course, "How did you do on the quiz today?" And the other said, "Balah," which means dates. And I didn't understand this very simple conversation. And I thought that, oh my, there's a gap between generations, of course. But how didn't I understand what he meant by balah? And I went home and I asked my kids and they told me, oh, it means bad. And so, oh, really? And you know, in teaching Arabic, of course, as in teaching any other language, we very much like to ask our students and encourage them to communicate with native speakers their age. And so here I thought that there is something missing. We're not teaching them what they should know, okay? And then I started I started looking at other and thinking of other food connotations. Of course, I know a lot. But I thought that there is a gap and this is not found in any of our textbooks. And then I thought I should start collecting them and having them in a book.
So could you talk a little bit about, how then you structured that and put that book together?
Yeah. First, I started thinking and I thought that some of the food connotations that I know, I started thinking about them and started writing them down. And then I said, okay, Yanni, if I say, the first thing that came up to my mind was the title of the book, Fish, Milk, and Tamarind. In Arabic, okay, it means fish, milk, and tamarind. Okay, so anybody, I thought that any student who knows Arabic and who would read these three words together, he would think that this is a list of food and beverages, for example, but he would not know that they mean a mismatch of something that does not go together. It could be anything. It could be something in clothes. It could be something in food. It could be anything, okay? And so I said to myself, no, I have to start collecting all these connotations, food connotations. And I did some kind of an ethnographic research. I started observing, listening to young people, listening to modern movies in Arabic, and of course, pulling out what I have in my head also. And I found that they are a lot. There are a lot of food connotations. And in all my teaching, we teach, of course, in Arabic, we teach the standard, the modern standard Arabic, and we also teach the spoken. Each one has its own books. And I never found any of these in these Arabic textbooks. So I said, no, I have to do this. And this will be like an eye-opener for teachers to include this in their teaching, especially that we are very much concerned with teaching culture. You know, culture and language are two sides of the same coin, of course. And we usually teach food as in an important topic in culture, beverages, menus, and so, but we never teach food connotations. And so I said, no, I think this will be very important for teaching Arabic as a foreign language.
And throughout the book is not just, so you have these food expressions and you kind of start out in it by telling us a little bit about you have a transcription list and a little bit about the sort of sounds that we make and how you need to make those sounds before. So can you talk a little bit about that? You know, it's a short section in the beginning, but it still sort of sets up pronunciation for people.
Yes, yes. With the Arabic letters, we have some sounds. Of course, most of the sounds are exactly like English, but we have some sounds that are different. And in order to teach our students how to pronounce them, we first give them these pictures, as you said, and we tell them how to pronounce the sound, where does it come out from, and we start giving them practice about this so that they can pronounce it correctly. And this is why every expression in the book has the transcribed letters so that it could be pronounced. And if some of these letters are not known to any reader who doesn't know Arabic, he can go to the first pages and find out what it is. As much as possible, yani, I try to make them easy for them. For example, the kh sound, I try to tell them that it's the snoring sound. So if you know, yeah, and I always tell my students, why do you put Z, Z, Z when you draw someone sleeping? Yeah, and when we snore, we don't say Z, we say kh, right? Yeah, and so, and I try to make it, I try to make it a bit simple. For example, the gh sound is like the gargling sound, like this, and so that they can read it easily.
Yes. And I hope that, and you have little...
that, I hope by doing that they get interested in knowing how to, wanting to learn Arabic. So
yes, and you have those little images like with the throat and with the letter in them, so it's really showing you exactly where to do it in your throat.
Yeah.
So the book is not just the sayings, there's images that go along with a lot of them. Yes. And so can you maybe talk about the images and how sort of the aesthetic that you were trying to, because they're sort of they're color images. It's not black and white. It's sort of full color images that go along with these.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Of course, to make it interesting and to make it nearer to the reader, to get the concept understood better, I tried to, an illustrationist worked on these images. Sometimes, we thought that, of course, I was working with her, discussing every image that she did, but sometimes we thought that we can never draw the connotation of the connotative meaning of the image. We have to pronounce, we have to draw the literal meaning. For example, kosa, which means zucchini, although this is a delicious dish and we all like zucchini, but it represents the expression kosa means it represents a negative societal act, which is nepotism. So how can you draw nepotism? Of course, it's very hard to draw it and be understood. So we draw it as kosa, or khiyar, or faus. Sometimes, but if, for example, some were very clear that we can write the, and this is what I said also in the introduction, that some of the illustrations go with the a literal meaning, and because it's difficult to have the connotative meaning, and others go with the connotative meaning. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so, and how many sort of phrases do you have in the book?
Yeah, I have 100. Of course, there are more, but the press wanted only 100, so they wanted it to be a 100-page book, gift book. And so I have right. 100.
So let's talk a little bit. We're not going to go through every single phrase, right? Yeah, but let's talk a little bit about some of these phrases. If there's some, are there certain ones that are used more often than others? So let's start with maybe some that are pretty everyday use or use more often.
I'll tell you a little bit about this. For example, there's one called filmishmish. Filmishmish, the literal translation is in the apricot, meaning in the apricot season or something like this, yes. And this, the connotative meaning of this means that this will never happen. Maybe because this apricot season is very short in the year. Maybe, this could be the reason. But if you tell me, when will you do this? And I'll tell you, filmishmish, in the apricot, it means I will never do it. Yeah. So this is used a lot. Also, ara. Ara asal, these are two words, but they mean pumpkin. A pumpkin is ara asal. But if you take the first part only, ara, it means that someone is fabricating speech or saying things that are not true so it's fabricating speech. But and if you take the second part, which is asal or zayil asal, like honey, okay, it means someone who's very sweet or something that's very sweet or very nice, and we use them a lot also. But each one means something contrary to the other, not contrary, but this is negative, this is positive. But when you put them together, it means a pumpkin. Yeah. Also, if I say he's sleeping in honey, which is name filasal, it means someone who is oblivious. Okay, thinking of things. And so this is one word, asal, that has several, when put with other words, it has different meanings. Some of the new ones that were new to me was kunafa. Kunafa is a very famous Arab dessert. And when they say kunafa, it means something that's complicated. See, it's totally different. The meaning is very different from the real meaning, the connotative meaning. And so I really like this. And the balah thing also, which means bad, although balah means dates, and dates are very nutritious. And why does it mean bad? I don't know. But if this student had done well, he would have said inab, which means grapes. So grapes would be good, balah would be bad. So these are the new ones to me. But the ones that we all know, and they are used a lot, and all of these are used a lot in the everyday speech. For example, متأمّع, which means, the okra, the vegetable okra. Yeah, and so before cooking it, you have to cut the top of it, the head of it, yes. And so if you say about, and this is called متأمّع. And so if you say about something متأمّع, this means that he's dressed in the nines, Yeah, and so things like that, and we use them a lot every day. Just a few ones were new to me and that I have included here. And this is why I'm telling everyone who has to have, be aware of what's going on. What are the new food connotations that are being used, especially among youth? I did my best. I tried to collect a lot of them, but there are more. Every day there are more.
And it was interesting because, like you said, there are some words that, and there are some phrases that kind of, in English, it makes sense, right? And there's some in English that wouldn't really make sense. And there's some that, like, I do love that your term for salad is used to, like, make a mess.
Yes.
Which I'm like, that makes sense, right? There are certain things that I'm like, that we should start using that. Or I love how, like, we often think of, like, and then right after that, you have ghee with honey, meaning living harmoniously together. So I was thinking that we have phrases like that that we use, but in English or in American English, we often don't use ghee, right, in an everyday phrase because it's not a food item we use, but we have other, you know, things that we use like sugar instead. And so there's certain phrases that make sense or would work together really well.
Sure. Yes, of course. Also, there is one of the ones that I really like also is that when you say that someone is soup, it means that someone is heavily sweating, so he feels as if he is soup. and this is also used a lot. You say just ana shorba, yani I'm sweating heavily because of I'm feeling hot or something.
And so they're which really, is very much it's very much like soup.
And so I thought that. Our students have to know these expressions because they will hear them a lot every day, and by all people, by all native speakers, and they have to know them.
Did you find, as you were doing this and looking, were there certain foods that came up more often that are, right, like, so are there certain foods that are used in expressions more than others?
Some of them are used more like asal, for example, as I told you, yani samno asal, yani ghee and honey, or like honey, or sleeping in honey, yani. Okay, there are a lot of expressions with honey. Most of them, each one is peculiar in itself. So there's nothing that came a lot. I think honey came a lot more. Also, maybe malh, which means salt. Yeah, it came in a few ones, aishu malh, bread and salt. Yani if we ate together bread and salt, this means yani we know each other very well and we we live together eating the least, which is bread and salt. Okay, so this means, and also Irish malheti, yani as if a piece of salt came, and I just cracked it with my my teeth. Also, it means it has a meaning, and so it came in a few also expressions. But most of them are a lot of them. But what combines them all is that they're all foods.
Another one that I thought was really interesting or funny was the phrase in Arabic is put a watermelon in your stomach. Means like you say here, which means like sort of don't worry about it, everything will be fine, don't worry about it.
And this is used a lot to put a watermelon in your stomach. Yani, the thing is that how is it related to this? I really, we have to start thinking about this. How is putting a watermelon in our stomach means that don't worry about it? Yani, it's the meaning itself is hard to get, but this is why it should be taught to students.
Yes, and that was one. So one question I had is: so you have this book, you have these phrases, and some, at least for me as a native English speaker, right? Some of the phrases make sense, are more intuitive, and others like this, the watermelon one. It's not something I would think about putting together. So when you're teaching Arabic, right, when you're talking with students, and there might be that kind of disconnect, are there certain things you do, are there certain ways you can like get them to sort of think about some of those phrases and use them more in language in ways?
Yeah, usually I put the picture first and I try to infer what is this, what do you think it is, how would you say this picture, for example, a peeled banana, okay? So Mozam Ashara, okay, do you know what this means? And I will give them choices, for example, to think about it, try to guess, and then we would talk about the meaning and what it means, and we try to use it in situations and things like that. So you can make a lot of activities from this book. Also, I used to teach an extracurricular cooking class. And so in this class, I used a lot of these expressions. For example, when I tell them, especially for beginners, okay? And so for example, if I hold a lemon, and I tell them lemon, and then I told, do you know what it means to, if I say العدد في lemon, يعني numbers are in lemons, do you know what it means? And I give them the meaning and we talk about it. And so I think it becomes fun and engaging, and it breaks the seriousness of the class. So I really enjoy this, and even if I'm not teaching them colloquial, if I'm teaching them standard reading and writing, you will also find this in the standard sometimes. And I can just give them every day a picture like this. We talk about it and we know the expression. And then I can ask them again and think of situations. How would you say it in your language? Do you have something similar to that or not? And so it can bring about a lot of discussion and engagement.
Yeah, so I was going to say, too, for people who might be teaching Arabic, that it seems as though it is a book that could be used at different levels, right? Yes. That you could use it with beginning speakers, but you could also use it with sort of more intermediate and advanced speakers as well, and learners, because there is, like you said, you can kind of use these terms as just learning the words, learning how pronunciation, but then also learning them more in...
Yes, for example, the peeled banana, which means a great opportunity in front of you. If I tell you this is a peeled banana and this is a great opportunity that you should take. And so if I can just show them the picture and tell them what it is, okay, and I'll tell the intermediate or advanced, okay, write me something that I can tell you, oh, this is a peeled banana. So they can start thinking what to write, okay, in Fosha, which is standard Arabic, so that at the end we can say, this is a peeled banana. Okay, so it can bring up a lot of activities, not just the expression itself, but talking about it and writing something that reflects it and things like that. Besides that, it's fun and a bit funny.
Yes. No, I love the images. I wish you could kind of show the images, right? But the images are really, some of them are, they're very cute. I don't know if that's the right word for them.
Yes.
But yes, like there's some, and like you said, some have that literal meaning and some are more the expression itself. And so it's kind of fun to see the images in there as well.
Yes.
Were there any of the words and terms, phrases that you were really surprised about when you sort of found them? Were there any that aren't used a lot, but you thought were important enough to put in the book?
Most of them, as I told you, are used a lot. But the ones that surprised me were the new ones that I didn't know their meanings, like Balahan, Dinah. And also one like Kofta, which means like Oriental meatballs. It's not meatballs exactly, but it's the same concept, Yani. And so Kofta, if you say about something Kofta, it means that this is sloppy work. Yeah, and so these new ones, they surprised me really, and I was glad to know that what they meant. I heard them, but I didn't know really what they meant until I heard this conversation, and I didn't understand what he meant by saying balah. Did he do well or did he do bad? And so this was the point that made me really want to start this book. Yes.
So you have this. So you have this book that is useful, right? So, you know, like we talked about, like you can use it as in teaching, but it's also a book that you could use, or someone might just enjoy if they're interested in languages or they're interested in knowing sort of. So it has all these sort of different uses. Is there an audience? Are there, like, do you have a wish, maybe? I don't know if that's the right word either, like a wish for sort of how this book is used or the different ways that this book is used.
Well, let me tell you, I also think that this book would be good for heritage students who are living abroad. They need to know this culture. Maybe they can speak Arabic a little bit with their parents, but they don't know what these expressions mean. And so I think this would be good also if they go through the book every now and then and read about them and know them. I think this is very good. Also for new teachers, we have a program an MA program for teachers and prospective teachers who will be teaching Arabic as a foreign language. And so they would also be aware that, okay, we can start teaching things like that. Culture is very important, and to make students communicate well with native speakers, they have to know their language and how they communicate. And this is one way to insert some cultural expressions into language. And so this is very important, yes.
So you have this, so you put this collection together. Are you working on, and this is like, I thought it was really interesting because you could do colloquial language about kind of, right, anything, but you really focused on food. Are you thinking about a new, thinking about doing other projects or other things similar to this? Usually that my final question is kind of like, what else are you working on? What is that?
Well, I've been working on articles and editing books at something academics. Well, but the fun thing is, I'm thinking of working on also productive skills and using short stories, but in. I draw the most important events of a short story. I can show you if you have the time. And then I make students, especially in the elementary, who need to know this culture, but the story itself is difficult for them to read. But we can look at the events in the story and we can talk about it and know the main, what happened in it. So we can have a general idea about the story. So I would be addressing elementary, intermediate, maybe students who can look at the pictures, very, very simple illustrations that I do myself, Yanya. And they reflect or represent short stories in Arabic. So I'm going to work about this new book. I hope it will be good. Yes.
And are short stories in Arabic, do they have a different, I have to ask this since you brought this up. Is it sort of a, in English, and when we write a short story, when we talk about short stories, we have sort of like you're talking about like a diagram that diagrams how the story, the action, the plot, falling action, rising action. Is it okay? Yes, sometimes, right? Stories are just sometimes it's a different way in which we structure or think about a story. So it's that same kind of thing, but looking at it through the
settings, characters, plot, everything, and also. They include a lot of culture, of course, as you know. So we can speak about culture through the stories, through these short stories. And so I'm planning to choose about, I've already done some, but I'm looking for more short stories that are that include a lot of culture in them and that can be easily represented by illustrations and very like stick persons or something like that, but a bit colorful. And so I think this will be my next book, inshallah.
Well, thank you so much, Dahl, for talking with me about Fish, Milk, and Tamarind, a book of Egyptian Arabic food expressions. Thanks for talking with me on New Books Network.
Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you for having me, and I'm really delighted. Thank you very much.